40, episode 6, December 11, 2021. This is Unjabbed Citizen, and I am your host, Alan Campbell. Today, in the news, Denmark breaks daily COVID-19 infection records for the third day in a row. Denmark is seeing an unprecedented spike despite having vaccinated nearly 77% of its population and being in the process of administering further booster shots. Overall, Denmark has seen a total of 529,000 COVID-19 cases, nearly 3,000 deaths. Remarkably, fellow Nordic nations such as Finland and Norway are breaking infection records too, despite having similarly high vaccination rates and reintroduced restrictions. How are those vaccines working out for you? For this week's show, I spoke with an old friend. We've known each other for most of our lives and have had some great times together. We've also argued a lot about pretty much everything under the sun. It's kind of hard to know if Matt argues with me because it's fun, or if he actually does believe the positions that he takes. Unfortunately, Matt falls into the camp of, it's not true until it's on the mainstream media. The government is just people doing their best to protect us. And it's best just to go along with the rules, even when he knows the rules are bullshit. One thing I learned from the conversation, it's futile trying to have a fact-based discussion with this group of people. Even when presented with the data, they dismiss it and ignore it. I want you to listen through the discussion and see if you can pick up what they do, how they deflect and move away from the facts and data and focus on things that they know you can't possibly have an answer to, and then think that because you don't have an answer, they must be right. It's bizarre, but it's understandable. It comes from books and articles that have titles like How to Speak to Your Conspiracy Theorist Friend. It goes like this. Ask a question. Ask a who or why question, as in, why is it happening, or who is doing that? Your friend won't have an answer that they can provide proof for. Ask another question. Ask another who or why question. Your friend's answer may have some inconsistencies with their previous answer. Your friend will see the inconsistencies and voila, they've discovered for themselves that they are wrong and are now cured. Welcome back to the flock, friend. It works, because when asked a question, we will naturally want to answer it. And if you try not to answer it, they immediately go into the attack and ask you why you won't answer the question. Because you don't know the answer to the who and why questions, there are likely to be inconsistencies. This is natural. It's like trying to figure out a jigsaw when you don't have the box and you don't even know how many pieces are in it. Is it a lion or a cat? Maybe it's both. Maybe it's neither. The inability to answer their who and why question is then used to discredit everything else, even when there is data and evidence. The other thing they do is comparisons. This makes arguments like, so what if the vaccines are killing people? People die having operations or taking aspirin and riding motorbikes. The funny thing is, if you ever made this argument as a reason to let COVID run its course using just treatments, you'd be labelled a granny killer. Nor does it address the actual risk-benefit equation of or free choice. I choose to ride a motorbike. No one forces me. I choose to take an aspirin. Well, actually, that's pretty rare. But no one forces me. So spare me the bullshit comparisons. Anyway, listen to the conversation and see if you can pick up the tactics that are used. Matthew, thank you for joining me. Appreciate it. I have been looking forward to this show for quite some time.
You have.
You and I have known each other for a long time. We've disagreed on quite a lot of stuff. And one thing I'm quite keen to understand is whether we disagree because you like disagreeing or whether we fundamentally disagree. Obviously you're pro-vaccine. You're pro most of the things that the government's rolled out in terms of the response to this pandemic. So we'll get into some of that. You've also made some rather crazy statements in the past. For example, comparing vaccines to seatbelts, which is just bizarre.
Right, yeah.
I know you've had some experiences or correspondence lately, so I'm just wondering if you've changed your mind on any of that type of stuff.
I wouldn't say I've changed my mind because I have right from the outset, I've tried to have an open mind, and I believe that from the outset that I've said I'm on the fence with regards to mandates. And, frustratingly for a lot of people, I can take months, if not years, to make up my mind about some things. And obviously, one of the reasons that I enjoy having you as a friend is I can be a provocateur and just drive you crazy with stuff that I have yet to make a decision on, and just throw stuff at you and have it, you know, bounce off your brain back at me, which is very entertaining. I will say, I think you take it all a lot more seriously than me, which is probably good. But you know, I've a very pragmatic, clinical, logical, rational attitude to everything, almost to a fault. So,
right. So let's dig into that a little bit, shall we? So, sure. So you still believe that vaccine mandates are akin to seatbelts?
I think that's a good analogy to use when discussing with people where their hard felt beliefs come from. Because without analogies, you can't, you struggle to get people to put things like risk and stuff into perspective. So I'm sure you agree that human beings are terrible at gauging risk.
I've seen that in the last few months. Absolutely.
Yeah. So people are scared of flying. People are scared of spiders. People are scared of snakes. They're not scared of drinking 4 beers a week, or they're not scared of getting in the car to, you know, drive 3 hours. But if you're a statistician and you look at all the ways that you're probably going to die, the things that you should be scared of are the things that most people do not spend a second thinking about. So, but that, I'm not saying that anti-vax, or I don't even want to use the term anti-vaxxers. I'm not saying that the people that have chosen not to get the vaccine are scared of getting the vaccine. I'm just thinking that some of them might be. Some of them may have decided that it's not worth the risk based on a few anecdotal stories.
A few anecdotal stories. Okay, right. So let's skip back to seatbelts for a minute. So you liken the risk of not taking the vaccine to not putting a seatbelt on?
Yes.
Okay. So do you think that we should be vaccinating 2-day-olds?
Sorry, say that again. Should be vaccinating what?
2-day-old kids.
2-day-old kids. Mm. No, not at the moment, no.
That we have to restrain 2-day-old kids in a motor vehicle, apparently.
Correct. And sadly, there will be cases where those children will die in an accident because they were not able to be retrieved from a crashed car. But that does not mean that I would change my mind about overall that being the wiser choice.
What happens when you have an accident is different to the act of putting a seatbelt on, though, or restraining someone in a motor vehicle.
Right. Well, it just means that there is, like I say, I'm a pragmatist. If I look at the stats, you're probably better off, if you care about your child, you're probably better off, statistically speaking, restraining them than not.
Absolutely. 100% agree.
That doesn't mean that there is a chance that your child will die because you restrain them.
But I think the problem that you're doing is you're conflating two different issues, right? When you're talking about vaccinations, we're talking about the act of getting the vaccination and what the vaccination does to you. What happens later? What happens later if you get coronavirus? It's the same thing as what happens later once you put your seatbelt on if you're in a car accident. Two different two different aspects of the same thing, I suppose. So let's just run a little test, right? So sure. I'll run through a list first, and then you can give me your list about seatbelts.
Sounds good.
Okay. So things to think about when you're getting vaccinated: pericarditis, blood clot in the lungs, fainting, myocarditis, vaginal bleeding after menopause, anaphylactic reaction, deep vein thrombosis, abnormal heart rhythm, blood clots thrombosis, blood clots or bleeding on the brain, Bell's palsy, Guillain-Barré, death.
Yes.
That's what you can get from having a vaccine in the shot.
Yep.
Can you run through your list of what can happen to you in the act of putting a seatbelt on?
Well, I'll do better than that. I'll tell you that all of those side effects that you just read out probably could apply to any medication that you give your child. So if you've ever given your child Pamol, or if your child needs a procedure that requires anesthetic, I can guarantee you the side effects will be that list plus more.
Yeah.
So rattling off a list of side effects and comparing it to seatbelts is not really a like-for-like analogy, because
I quite agree. Wearing seatbelts and comparing it to mandating seatbelts and mandating vaccines is not like-for-like either. It's completely different.
Well, I guess what you bring it back to is protecting the people you love, right? And this is where people like you and I, who rely on data that comes through multiple streams from multiple sources, we kind of have to pick a point, right? We want to protect the people that we love. And so you have to go, what is the best way for me to protect the person I love? And so I say, I've looked at the stats, and there is a greater probability of the people that I love suffering horrible, you know, side effects or getting COVID, and I've chosen the vaccine. But you look at statistics and data from a different source, and you come to a different conclusion.
I look at data from the same source. So I've shown you the Public Health England data that you looked at, and you quite rightly pointed out that the hospitalizations and risk of death from COVID for vaccinated in that data is lower if you've been vaccinated than if you haven't been vaccinated.
Yeah.
The bit that you didn't look at, and that was the graph that I sent you, was all-cause mortality.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the vaccines might stop you from dying from COVID, but when you look at the data, there's a very high, quite a high likelihood that they'll cause you to die from something else. Because the all-cause mortality for those that have been vaccinated is significantly higher than those that haven't been.
And that's not that. What we don't know is, out of all of those people that have been vaccinated, how many of them have also had COVID?
Sorry, I missed that slight zoom problem.
Out of all of those people that have been vaccinated, how many of them have also had COVID?
So this is per 100,000, right? The data doesn't actually... Can't remember it. I don't think it actually tells you whether they had COVID or not, but I'm not sure that that's relevant, to be honest. Because
because the way that you, I'm assuming that what you're intimating is that people are dying at a higher rate because they've been vaccinated. Is that right?
What I'm saying is people that have been vaccinated are dying at a higher rate. That comes through very clearly in the data.
Yeah. But you're not saying it's because they've been vaccinated.
No, just that they are dying at higher rates, significantly higher rates.
So, it could well be that they have also had COVID.
So,
because
we're saying then that the unvaccinated people haven't had COVID?
No, what we're saying is that, as we know, people that have been vaccinated are getting COVID, right? Mm-hmm. And COVID can wreak havoc on your body. So anybody who knows that would expect death rates to go up in both unvaccinated and vaccinated
people. And that's the point.
And the majority of the people in the UK have been vaccinated before death rates would be higher.
Matthew, the data is per 100,000 people in each population group.
Right.
So per 100,000 people that died that have been vaccinated, that rate of death is higher than the per 100,000 group that haven't been vaccinated. So it is factored for population. So it's not on a percentage basis. So we're saying that unvaccinated people haven't had COVID?
No, we're not saying that at all.
But they're not dying at the same rates. So why are unvaccinated people not dying at the same rates as vaccinated people?
Well, I don't know, mate. I only saw your spreadsheet today, and I would have to have someone else have a look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I did a little bit of digging last week, and they were saying, are heart attacks increasing? And I came back, all these articles said heart attacks are on the rise. And then I looked at the dates, and they're all from the middle of last year.
Yep.
So that means that before vaccines were even rolled out, heart attacks were on the rise and deaths were on the rise. And so that could be
not total deaths, there's been no excess deaths in any population across the world apart from about the last 3 or 4 months.
Okay. Well, either way, let's say that you are right and that all of the people that have chosen to be vaccinated are now going to, you know, die off at a greater rate. What then? What's, you know?
Well, I think at the very least, it should mean that we shouldn't be mandating vaccines.
Right. Well, but you're talking to someone who's already on the fence about mandating. So,
how do we get you off the fence? What data or what information?
I need someone other than you.
Present that to me. The public health data is there. I sent you the spreadsheet. Do the analysis. You can see where I've got the data from.
If I had time, I could. But I'm assuming you're not the only person in the world that's looking at this data, and no one else is.
Lots of other people have said it, and that's the whole point. There's been lots of commentary around it, but not on mainstream media.
Okay, I've seen one person, and that was someone who was fully buying into the narrative of anti-vax, anti-mask, anti-mandate. And so I guess.
Where do you get your information from?
So many different sources.
Like?
I guess you could say just about everywhere that anybody gets any information from these days.
Are you on Gab?
No.
Are you on Telegram?
No.
No. So you're not getting information from every source, because there's a whole bunch of people that are on those platforms that have very good information and do a heck of a lot of research.
I could ask you that same question. Where are you getting your information from?
Gab, Telegram, Facebook sometimes, unfortunately, although I find it a kind of a depressing place.
When you find information that doesn't match your narrative, do you dismiss it or do you go?
I investigate it. And one of the interesting things about those platforms is there is a heck of a lot of debate. And when people put stuff up that looks a bit dodgy, there's a lot of people that jump in and go, wrong, that's incorrect, or this is the truth about that, and they put up links to the proper stories, or it's a self-fact-checking environment. It's really, really interesting.
And so how do you disseminate what you believe and what you don't believe?
You go to the data, you go back to the original data sources as much as possible.
Yeah. Right?
And that's the thing. The data is there. It's really, really clear, but it's not being reported.
Right. So you've come to a conclusion that supports your narrative. And as you know, with any scientific hypothesis, you should try to disprove it as much as possible. Have you tried to disprove it?
It's pretty hard to disprove it when you get the data from Public Health England and you do the graphs, just straight graph, don't play the data, just the pure raw data, and you see the graph and you see what it tells you. And then what is it telling you?
These people that are dying, what are they dying from?
It doesn't go into that detail. It just says that the death rate is for vaccinated is high. So the all-cause mortality for vaccinated people is higher than unvaccinated people by a significant amount. It's not tiny. It's quite large.
Is it enough to offset the people that were saved by the vaccine? Because
how many people were saved by the vaccine?
Well, as you said, the same website that you got your data from, it was just a tiny fraction of the people that died from COVID that were
fully vaccinated. What's the survival rate for COVID?
Sorry, what?
What's the survival rate for COVID?
Why are you quickly moving on from...
No, it's relevant. What's the survival rate for COVID?
But I want to know if you do agree with those...
I don't agree that the vaccines have necessarily saved a lot of lives at all.
You have to vaccinate
120,000 people to save a life.
That supports your narrative, but you dismiss the data that doesn't.
Same website. Matthew, I don't dismiss it. Like I said earlier, the data does show that if you're vaccinated, apparently, when you look at it, you are less likely to end up in hospital or die from COVID. I can't remember. Have you got the number in front of you? I can't remember the number, but it's enough.
Bring it up.
It's enough. Well, it's enough to show up in a graph. But remember, there's a couple of things in there that you need to think about as well, right? One is there was some changes in the way that testing was done around vaccinated versus unvaccinated. There was changes in definitions of vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And there is data that shows that you need to have vaccinated something like 120,000 people to save one life from COVID.
Okay. So this here's a statement from the website that you got your numbers from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you stand by that website, right? Because that's where I
stand by the data, not necessarily the commentary that they put on their website. Because the commentary doesn't always match up with the data.
Well, this is not commentary. This is just a summary of the data. In England, between the 2nd of January and the 2nd of July 2021, there were 51,281 deaths involving COVID-19. 640 occurred in people who were fully vaccinated, which includes people who had been infected before they were vaccinated. So let's, you know, you and I are both annoyed by the fact that they class people or class COVID deaths and people that get run over or get shot and that sort of thing. So let's be super, super generous and say it's half that. Let's say 25,000 people died from coronavirus. And
from what date?
Died who were fully 2nd of January to the 2nd of July.
And when did England start rolling out their vaccine program?
I don't know.
That's the point. It is relevant. Because
Before we go there, do you agree with that statement?
I've got no data, nothing to show that it's incorrect.
It is from the website that you got your data from.
And I've got nothing to show that that's incorrect. Yep.
Right. So you agree with that statement?
No, I said I've got nothing to show it's incorrect. I'll have to have a look at it.
Right. Okay. So you will have to have a look at it. So when I say I'll have to have a look at it.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
And this is not a statement coming from like your best mate email. This has come from a website.
Yeah, some of the commentary on that website isn't supported by the data, because never anywhere on that website do they say that all-cause mortality for vaccinated people is higher than unvaccinated. It is not on the website, but it is in the data. So when they miss out something like that, it makes you question everything.
This is where things get a bit uncomfortable, because I say to you, who's putting that statement up there and why?
Well, it's people that are promoting the vaccine, right? The government's got a narrative. All governments have got this narrative about the vaccine. They're pushing it.
And why is that?
Well, it's a fair chunk of it would be about money. A fair chunk of it's about people wanting to keep their jobs.
And these people that are doing it, you know, killing off, how many people are dying from the vaccine now?
So let me ask you a question then. Right.
Well, no, you haven't answered mine.
No, and I'm not going to. But let me ask you
a question. That's interesting.
I will ask you a question that's related to it. Because you're saying...
Answer your question?
Matthew, what you always do is you default to we don't know who's doing it, so therefore it's not happening. Okay.
I'm trying to get you to a point where you use critical thinking... To try and establish what is really going on.
So you've heard of Davos, right?
I've heard of what?
Davos.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So a bunch of billionaires and powerful people get together, talk about the shape of the world, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you not think that any of those have conversations about how they can use their power and influence to shape what's happening in the world?
Sure, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So people can organize things, right? People are really, really clever at organising a whole bunch of stuff that we ordinary people don't know anything about. There's been some great examples through history, right?
Have there?
Look at D-Day landings, for example, in Normandy and on the French coast, right? Yep. Biggest undertaking ever. Thousands of ships, thousands of aeroplanes.
Yeah. Massive psychological bombed a whole bunch of places, thousands of people killed as they land on the beaches.
Imagine massive psychological exercise against the Germans so they wouldn't know that it was coming. Huge organization. Humans are really good at organizing things, right?
They didn't organize it that well. when you look at the D-Day landings, have you seen what happened on the D-Day landings?
Yeah,
it was not a perfectly run.
No, I didn't say it was perfectly, but it succeeded, and it was a massive, massive undertaking done by humans. Do you think that have we landed on the moon?
Yes.
So we're organised to get tiny little humans from Earth, outer space, onto the moon. That's an incredible undertaking. And my point is, humans are really good at organising things. And when you've got the power and the money that some of these multi-billionaires had, there is nothing that they couldn't
Once again, achieve. I disagree. I wouldn't. The fact that we did it is amazing. And people died. Astronauts got burnt to death. As part of the process. And it took how long did it take from mm-hmm. the day we decided to do it to the day it happened?
Yep.
And it only barely happened because Neil Armstrong decided to ignore an alarm that was going off in the capsule at the time.
Okay. So your argument then is that we've done some amazing things, but it's been despite our cock-ups, and yes. none of it's been perfect. And despite all of that, we managed to produce a vaccine to a new virus which doesn't kill anyone and is going to save the planet in record time.
Who said it doesn't kill anyone?
Okay, so it does kill people.
Definitely.
Okay, how many people does it kill?
I don't know. I would say it's probably in the region of maybe one every 500,000 to one every million.
Okay. Well, I agree to disagree on that, I think, because I can assure you it's a lot more than that. But
what would you say it is?
It's probably closer to one every, I don't know, 300,000 probably.
That's so you've chosen, plus, you've chosen to not have the vaccine because of the plus, one in every 300,000
risk rate. That's death. There's a lot more people being severely injured by it.
Let me ask you this, Alan. What do you think the death rate is for anaesthetic use?
What's the death rate from COVID, which you meant to be, the vaccine's meant to protect you against?
What is the death rate from anaesthetic?
I don't know. It's irrelevant. I'm not getting an operation
have
any time.
Guess. Have a guess.
I don't know. It might be 1-2% maybe.
No, and same way that we've measured it in the vaccine. One in every how many people die?
I have no idea. Tell me.
One in every 200,000.
Right, okay.
So the next time
but it's not mandatory and they're not anesthetizing the whole world every year.
Will you refuse to have it?
Well, it depends what I need it for. If they say I need it to go to a shop.
What you need it for?
Well, if they say
it's for pain relief. It doesn't do anything to protect you.
Neither does the vaccine.
It's purely for pain relief. I'm asking you, well, say you need surgery on your heart. Will you refuse anaesthetic knowing every one in 200,000 people die?
It's a risk-benefit, right? That's what I've always said. It's risk-benefit. So let's talk about risk-benefit for the benefit for the vaccines. What are my chances of dying from COVID?
Your chances of dying from COVID are like 0.01%.
Less than average.
Are you asking for you specifically or just anybody in general?
Someone in my demographic.
Okay, so someone over 50, and I don't want to call you out here, but how's your health? How's your weight? How's your...
It's about 0.0... It's about 0.04 or something. So why would I take a vaccine? Why would I add to my risk profile by taking a vaccine? And what right has the government got to mandate it?
Well, that's where I'm on the fence. I don't know that they do.
Good. So we agree. For my risk profile, I shouldn't take it. And the government sure as hell shouldn't mandate it.
So you shouldn't take it? I disagree. I think your perception of risk is wobbly. You shouldn't ride a motorbike. You shouldn't drink beer. You shouldn't have a shower. The things that will kill you are so much higher on the list of things to worry about than the vaccine. But the fact that you might get COVID and it's more likely to kill you than the vaccine is the analysis that most of us have done, right? Now, you've decided that it's one in every 300,000 and I've decided that it's one in every 500,000. At some point, there's people out there that would never ride a motorbike around Auckland because the risk is too high. But you've decided I'm willing to take that risk.
Yep.
There's people out there that won't drink.
Hey, that's right.
Now, And you've decided that somehow the vaccine is this big, you know, scary thing. I don't think it is. But when that's a completely different argument from mandating it. And that's where I have an abundance of sympathy for people that don't want to take it and are being forced to. It's like someone forcing someone to ride a motorbike over the harbour bridge while having a snake slither on them, you know, and being told this is for your own good. It's like, well, I'm just not convinced that's a good idea. And the only reason why I say I'm still on the fence is because I haven't had a good enough argument given to me from the other side. And like, I've had your argument given to me, which is very convincing. So I'm waiting for someone from the other side to give me a convincing argument why mandates are a good idea. And I haven't heard it yet.
And you won't, because they're not. But it's good that you're still on the fence, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it the other day, and I you know, maybe this is a false memory, but I seem to remember these programs being on TV at like 7:30 at night, where you would have a panel of scientists, you know, four on this side and four on the other side, and then you would have an audience, a live audience of the general public, and you would have a moderator, and you would just, you know, talk these things out for like 3 or 4 hours on national television. And I just think those things would be so fantastic right now.
Yep.
And I used to feel like those sorts of things used to have their roots in Europe and England and those sorts of things. And I search for them these days and I can't find them.
Yeah.
And that's what's disheartening to me.
And, you know, one of the things that convinces me even more not to have the vaccine, apart from the fact that I don't believe that they're either safe or effective, is that the drive to make people take them and the lack of discussion or allowance for any type of discussion on it all just drives me to go to hell. There's no way in hell I'm going to do what you're saying just because you say that it's safe. It's not going to happen, right? If we can't have a discussion on it.
I got to say, I kind of love that. And I think that's important. Because that is, you know, that's one of the things that stops authoritarian governments getting into place and people just blindly following along. Yeah. Where I guess you and I kind of perhaps don't align is intentions. So I think you, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but you do kind of ascribe people with sinister intentions, whereas I kind of just think it is grown-ups are essentially children, frightened children, running around in adult bodies, trying to do the right thing and failing 9 times out of 10. Whereas I feel like you have ascribed a sinister motive to a lot of this stuff.
I think it's not.
I just think incompetence can be you know,
but
ascribed to so many things in our history.
I agree, but I wouldn't put too much of this down to incompetence. I mean, if you look at it from a, take our wonderful Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, right? I'm sure she thinks she is doing what's right. As right. much as that pains me to say it. I think she really does think that what she did right. But if you look at it from her point of view, I don't think this is about, for her, the vaccines or the health of individuals or the pandemic, right? She has already said that we're at our nuclear moment, there's climate change, people are killing the planet. You know, we've got to stop people killing the planet. And that's where I just look down the road and I can see where this is going and what governments are going to do, because this is an exceptional opportunity to say, actually, we can save the planet using this pandemic as an excuse to stop people doing things that are going to kill the planet. Whether they're going to kill the planet or not is a completely separate discussion. And that's, you can see that's where it's going to go, right? You can see that at a number of places happening already around the world. You have any views on that?
No, I don't disagree. Once again, I just feel like you you took the wind out of my argument by saying that you feel like Jacinda's intentions are good and moral, which is not, you know, not where I thought you'd come from in the past, where I thought you thought her intentions are power.
They're not remote from each other, though, right? Because you can still have good intentions, but you need the power to implement those intentions, right?
Yeah.
So I have no doubt she's a power-hungry cow.
Maybe there is some overlap there between, our views. Like I said before, I am ruthlessly pragmatic, and I don't care if your intentions are the best intentions of the world. If they don't get the results that count, I don't really care about your intentions.
No, exactly.
You can be the kindest, happiest, most well-intentioned person on the planet. Analogy that someone used once, which I thought is good, is that if you were going in for heart surgery and there was the kindest, most PC, friendliest surgeon on one side, and then you had some kind of racist, horrific, psychopathic surgeon on the other side who was really, really good, who would you go with?
Yeah, I know exactly what I'd
go with. I'm going to go with the psychopath. I'm going to go with the person that gets me the good the result, regardless of who that person is.
A similar example might be, would you like a doddering old fool for a president or someone that sends mean tweets? But let's not go there.
Well, my view is that I can't stand both. And that, can I just use that moment to say, once again, I just hate this has become about sides. For your 10 listeners out there, please don't take a side.
I appreciate all my listeners, and it
there are no sides. We are, despite what your neighbour thinks, despite what Jacinda thinks, and what me and Alan think, we are all in this together, whether we like it or not. There are no sides. Whatever happens, whoever's right, 5-10 years from now, we are living with the repercussions of this together. So
absolutely, and I think the really frustrating thing for me is that the government tries to create sides.
It certainly feels like it. Yeah, and I love it when they fall on their face, when they call out some business or something that's staying open to let unvaccinated people in there, and then you hear the people that own that business talk, and they're kind, passionate, reasonable people. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, there you go. There's another side to this. And they say, everyone's welcome. Vaccinated, unvaccinated, don't care.
Yeah. Well, certainly, it's been heartening to see there's been a lot of businesses, particularly up our way, that have been inclusive. There have been some that haven't been. And a lot of it's been for no particular scientific reason, or because they're not part of the mandated industries, but they've chosen to introduce the mandates.
Yeah.
And I've had a little bit of feedback that maybe they want to rethink their view on the world. But
and I do think we're lucky in New Zealand that we are all kind of one quite small village, really. So when you talk about the people that are going to enforce all of these arbitrary nonsense rules, the army, the police, you and I, we both have friends and family in both of those institutions. They have no massive loyalty to the government. They shouldn't. And when I know you've called out before that you're scared that New Zealand's going to turn into a police state and that sort of thing. And I just have no fear of that at all, because I know the police. They're my neighbours. They're my nephews.
Yeah.
And things could get ugly, but things are not going to go that way. You look at it now. Yeah. You look at the enforcements that have been handed down for the people that have broken the rules now. What's happened? Maybe a fine here and there. No one's in jail. And that's why I think, and it's easy for me to say because I'm on the other side of the fence, but that's why I'm saying for the people that are losing their jobs and that sort of thing, maybe the answer is just go, you know, bugger it. I'm going to keep running my business. I'm going to keep doing this and just see what happens.
A lot of people that are running their businesses that are having to get forced or meant to be forced vaccinated, if they're not in hospitality, they are continuing to run their business. And even some in hospitality have either redone their models or, done something so that they can stay in business. But your point about the police, though, I guess one of my concerns is that if you look at the forced mandate, the vaccine mandates for the police, there'll be a number of police that will leave because of that. There's a whole lot of young police that are in there now. And I guess what concerns me is over time you may see a lot of the older police that kind of had more of a bigger worldview leaving, and you end up with all of the really keen people in there that, are for vaccines, for mandates, for following government rules, and it may actually cause the police become a much less friendly force than it is today.
Yeah, maybe. I'm slightly more optimistic than you because all of those young people joining the police force are our sons and daughters,
Not all our sons and daughters.
When I say our, I mean Kiwi families. They're out there in the community. They come home at Christmas time. They spend time with their friends and family outside of the force, and that's kind of goes back to my point about don't pick a side. Keep these people in your friend group. Keep the dialogue going. Keep it friendly.
I agree. I guess when I look at a lot of young people and how they've been educated, and maybe it's not quite the same for the police, but I certainly know a number of people that have come out of university and their views, by the way of thinking, are a little bit odd, and they're a little bit...
I hear so many stories of that, and it does concern me. But in my own personal life, as a dad of... 19, 17, 11 year old, my 19 year old who has brought so many friends back. We've had parties at our house and I talk to them. Their opinions are as varied and as passionate as ours.
Yeah.
They are as animated as us about this stuff as we are. There's no consensus. And there's a real backlash against the woke minority in that group.
Maybe I'm being a bit dark. Maybe I should lighten up.
Well, we only have our own little circles to really go on and what we hear in podcasts and shit, right?
Yeah.
But what, as you and I know, taking a census from mainstream media and Twitter and the internet is dangerous. I tend to look at that, get amused, get angry, get vocal, and then look at the people around me and go, it's not reflected in anything I see. This is nothing like reality.
Yeah.
And sure, there's a super vocal minority that we need to continue to shut down, but it is a minority.
I
don't carry those same fears,
And maybe that's been a disconnect of mine, because when I look about the stuff that doesn't get reported, I should be also looking at the stuff that does get reported and recognising that is also a minority, and there's a reason that stuff's being reported and it's not necessarily reflective of how the majority people think. So,
yeah. I will say my view gets a little bit dimmer when I look overseas, but I'm pretty optimistic in New Zealand. I just feel like New Zealand doesn't do stupid like they do overseas. Like, I went out for lunch yesterday at the Viaduct and, went into the restaurant. There were five of us. We all showed our vaccine certificates. He didn't check our IDs. He scanned it and then he held it up to me and said, "Is this you?" And I said, "Yes, that is me," and walked into the restaurant. And as I walked into the restaurant, I put my mask on for the 5 seconds it took me to walk to the table and then took it off again. And I thought, this is gonna last exactly 3 seconds. This is just so stupid. And New Zealanders don't do stupid.
Well, you put your mask on and you showed your passport. So there's a little bit there.
Yeah, but then the girl behind me didn't, you know?
Yeah.
She was walking to the table and she was carrying a mask in her hand and I was like, oh, put your mask on. And she was cracking up laughing and she was holding it up over her face and then threw it down. And the guy at the entrance was cracking up laughing. We just don't give a shit, man. We just do not care.
So don't wear your mask and don't show your vaccine passport. It will all be happy.
Well, no, I'll do it for now because, you know, we're all just, you know, we're playing this game and we're all just...
Not all of us.
Not all of you. I've picked my spot, and to be honest, life is bloody good. You know, I had a fantastic lunch, hanging out with my friends, jumped off the Sky Tower yesterday, and everyone I meet is friendly, happy.
So you'll take your booster in May? Or before then?
Possibly, yeah. I haven't made up my mind yet. Yeah. That's one of those things.
What about the one after that?
Well, here's what it rests on. It hinges on so many unknowns, right? So... I'm an optimist, right? So I can't help but hoping that the Omicron variant is going to sweep across the world and it's going to be incredibly infectious and yet it's not going to be as serious and we're all just going to get it and it's going to be a cold and it's going to be over. And of course I'm not going to get the booster then. Or one of the pills that one of the pharmaceutical companies has brought out is going to be able to treat COVID within 3 days of you getting it. In which case, no, I won't bother getting the booster.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't take the Pfizer one if I were you, but that's just me.
Yeah, I know. And it's the thing, you know, I'll take your opinion, I'll take someone else's opinion, I'll let 5 million Americans and 50 million Chinese take it first, and then I'll make up my mind.
Did you watch Dear Leader the other day? Promoting the Pfizer pill and talking about the how it reduced hospitalizations by 50% or whatever it was.
Who was saying that?
Adern.
No, I didn't see her. I tend to fast forward her.
I struggled to listen to her, but I did hear her say this, and she was talking about how the Pfizer pill it might have been the Merck one. Doesn't matter, but anyway, no, it was Pfizer. So you take it twice a day for 5 days, blah blah blah, it reduces death by 50%. Fantastic. The only problem is the second half of the trial, which you didn't mention, showed that patients in the group treated with the drug were more likely to be hospitalized or to die than those that got the placebo. So there's different results from the first and second half of the trial. There was 23 people on the committee, 13 voted to approve it, 10 voted not to. Again, I'd be having a close look at that before I decided to take it.
Yeah, I mean, once again, it's like all those other things I was talking about with risk, right? You got to weigh up the risk reward.
And I guess when you talk about that, the thing that really, really pisses me off is we have treatments available now. We don't need to die from COVID. We don't need to take the vaccine. There are multiple treatments available. So what game are we playing?
Yeah, I don't know. And that's where I would say to you, why do you think we're not using those treatments now?
Classic. Okay, the next 20 minutes were a series of who and why questions, as Matt went full Socrates on me, trying to get me to undertake some critical thinking to draw out inconsistencies in my argument. That's fine. Good on him for doing it. The problem is, though, that it tends to be repetitive and not particularly useful. I already know that I don't know whether this is a grand plan or just an opportunity. Maybe it's both, depending on who you are and what level you are operating at. I have no doubt that there are different agendas and that they are not always aligned. I already know I don't know who knows the full truth, if anybody does. I already know I am unsure about why President Trump, a man that I think achieved some great things for his country, continues to push the vaccine. Though I do know that all humans are fallible, and ego is a weakness suffered by many men. I know that my knowledge is limited, which is why I keep going back to the data, a point studiously ignored. Opining about this or that achieves little. For me, the facts are clear, and ruthlessly pragmatic and rational people need to start standing on the facts. Here are some facts. The FDA has asked for 75 years to release the documents related to the vaccine approval, the same documents that they just read in 140-odd days before approving the vaccine. The vax do cause injury and death in a certain percentage of people, and I don't have the moral right to force people to risk that. It's more than anecdotal. there are tens of thousands of documented cases. The efficacy of the vax at stopping infections and transmissions is at the very least questionable. Vaccine passports are not needed. Either the vax works and people that have it are protected, so the passport is not needed, or it doesn't work and the vaccinated can spread the virus, in which case the passport is not needed. Any argument that it's to protect the vulnerable and those that can't get jabbed is nonsense. This is shown by the process and how few people have managed to get a medical exemption, even without having the moral discussion on whether it's right or for the state to risk someone's life in order to save someone else's. There are treatments available that have been shown in the real world, dealing with real human lives, to be greatly beneficial. Yet governments have interfered with the doctor-patient relationship to reduce the availability of those treatments. Governments have introduced or amended legislation that provide them with much more power at the expense of their citizens' freedoms. In New Zealand, the powers of the new 1956 Health Amendment Act are extraordinary. These are the things we know. Is that not enough to encourage you to stand up? How much more would be needed? Anyway, having established what I already knew, that there are things that I don't know, after a rather terse exchange, we moved on.
So what's going to change in the next 12 months or 18 months?
In the next 12 months or 18 months, I predict that COVID will not be a huge thing in our lives.
And do you think we'll be
living... A lot of the regulations that have been put in place will be lifted.
A lot. Okay. So you think that we'll be living life the way that we did before COVID?
More so than we are now, yes.
More so than we are now. That wouldn't be hard. How far, what do you think will be different to our previous lives and our new life?
I don't know. I think some people will probably still stick to wearing masks, unfortunately. That's about it, really.
Okay.
I don't really see much in the way. Because I look at England. England has basically been through what we're going through now, and they're out the other side. Well, they're going to sports events, they're going to concerts. They just could not give a shit.
Okay.
And I don't see them ever going back because they don't want to. And they've and one of the outcomes of this may be that we have a greater acceptance of our own mortality, you know? Because I think that's one of the things that's happened in this modern age of, you know, medicine and extended lifespans, is that we really resist the idea of risk and death, but we're all going to die.
Yep.
And I think, you know,
it sure
maybe are. One of the outcomes of this is that we all just accept that it may not be tomorrow, it may not be next week, but it's going to happen. And it may be tomorrow. And it may be because of a vaccine, or it may be because of COVID.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
On that note, I'm going to leave you there. I give you one final piece, though. I can guarantee for me, it won't be from the COVID vaccine. That is not the reason I'm going to die.
And that's fine. And you know what? There was one other thing I was going to say tonight, is that I wouldn't want you to get it right now. Because one of the things that I do firmly believe in is the... Now I'm blanking. What is it when you
psych myself into dying?
Yeah, but what's it called? The effect that when you believe you've taken a medicine,
the placebo
So I honestly, you know, I believe I've seen studies that show that the placebo effect is incredibly strong and powerful, and can be used for good or bad. And that's why I think, if you were to waver right now and think, oh, maybe I should take the vaccine, I would say, don't do it, Alan. Because I honestly think if you took it, you would definitely have adverse side effects.
Yeah. It'd be just like the same. I told you so. The
vaccine. Yeah, but it could just as easily be the placebo effect because it is that powerful.
Yeah.
And, I've seen it in my own circle of friends where, you know, a whole bunch of my mother's friends back in their 30s went and saw a psychic. And they told one of the ladies, you're going to die when you're never going to reach the age of 32.
Really?
And the whole year that she was 31 years old, she was sick, she was ill, she was, unable to function. She's still alive now, but she didn't die. So the psychic was wrong. So you could go two ways. You could go, oh, the psychic was nearly right. Or you could say the psychic planted a seed in her that was so powerful that the placebo effect just about killed her.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing that I would say is, you know, for your audience, as a danger, is try not to take on board too much stuff that freaks you out, you know? Because I guarantee if you're freaked out by the vaccine and then you take it, I guarantee you a week later, you are going to be feeling chest pains. You are going to be feeling weird things that you've never felt before. 100%.
Yeah.
And you and I will never know.
No.
Yeah.
No, one thing I'm sure of is that most people now, and certainly in the group up here that I'm involved with, that have chosen not to take it, aren't going to take it. At this point, will not happen. And we're quite happy to be part of the control group.
Yeah.
So that's all good. And I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
As a vaccinated follower of the rules, to your audience, I say I only wish you all the best. And believe it or not, you know, we are all like that. We all are wishing you the best. And we all just hate this shit and want it to go away.
Yep.
So just, you know, Merry Christmas, hang in there. Don't let it define your life. And just, you know, be very careful listening to what Alan says.
And I have to say, I'm looking forward to editing this. I will minimize the editing. I might just remove some naughty words. But
yeah.
I appreciate
it. Once again, you know, I've said this before, you and I are an example of two people that just disagree violently on so much stuff. But I just, you know, I do not have another person in the world that I'd rather talk to.
Fantastic.
It's just so much fun.
It is. Awesome. Appreciate it. Thanks, mate.
All right.
Stop recording.
Take it easy, brother.
So, yeah.
See you, mate. Bye.
So, in summary, governments don't have secret agendas. Policy positions are not developed in secret and implemented without the public knowing about it. Everything has to be an entire plan orchestrated by individuals. There is never a step-by-step and opportunistic approach to government. Ruthlessly practical and objective, except when it comes to the vaccines, as the data becomes more and more clear that they simply don't provide long-term protection. We've gone from two jabs for summer to, okay, you might need a booster after 6 months, to actually, well, you need it after 3 months, to actually, you'll need a full shot, and probably at least annually. Ruthlessly pragmatic, my ass. 12,000 people might die, given his own numbers. But still on the fence about mandates. What would the number need to be? 100,000? 200,000? I'm the one talking about data and facts. He wants to speculate about who and why, and yet I'm the conspiracy theorist? Anyway, I don't want to be too hard on Matt. He's a good man. Just like many, he can't fathom that he doesn't know everything. He can't imagine that there may be competent and evil people. He can't see that there could be a plan. He can't fathom that people may have an end game. They may have highly moralistic goals, a righteous cause, and they may be smart enough to continue to take steps that take them ever closer to their utopia. Or that if there is no plan, a step-by-step zombie walk to a technocratic authoritarian society is just as bad as if there was a plan. And because he can't see it, it cannot be true. This was never meant to be a beat-up Matt session. He's a good man and a good mate. He's well-read, intelligent, and has an amazing grasp for detail. And I really appreciate the conversations and the way that he challenges me. It makes me want to learn more. It makes me want to be able to give my listeners more. One thing I do agree with Matt on is that in the end, we will get our lives back. I think the fight will be much longer and harder than he does, but we will win. Not because government will voluntarily relinquish power, but because we will take it back. Because we have stood up and continue to stand up, our numbers will continue to grow, and in the end, we will prevail. And when we do, we must not be satisfied with a few token gestures signifying our restored freedom. We must go through the legislation and strip as much power as possible from government, then somehow put a system in place to ensure that this never, ever happens again. Okie dokie, that winds up another show. Matt, don't hit me, man. I love you, brother. As always, don't forget to like or thumbs up the show on whatever platform you're on. Send feedback to unjabcitizen@gmail.com. I will be back on January the 15th. Still thinking about in what format that will be, but come along and listen and you'll find out. Have a Merry Christmas, everyone. Stay safe, stay sane, and appreciate the good things in life.